Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of Madei for the 18th of Kislev, and it is a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein's on two very separate topics, but the overall theme is the question of when we do or don't have to be sure to stop other people from, or to do our best to stop other people from committing a sin. This is from Shut Igrot Moshe Evan HaEzer, from the Evan Ezer section, the fourth volume, fourth time he comes to Evan Ezer in Igrot Moshe, response number 61. And it's dated the 18th of Kislev of Tuf Shin Lamed Gimel of 1972. And it's written to the Chinuch Atzmai, to the administrators of Chinuch Atzmai in Eretz Yisrael. Chinuch Atzmai is a separate set of school institutions outside of the government framework that are done for the purposes of making sure that the halacha and Torah are followed in ways that the members and the administrators of Chinuch Atzmai think is necessary, meaning they think that the government-run schools, even those that are dati, that are observant and orthodox, aren't sufficiently observant and orthodox. They have a separate network of schools, and they have two questions that they turn to Moshe Feinstein with. It's kind of interesting. This is the early 1970s. I don't know that they didn't turn to Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael as well, but they did turn to Moshe Feinstein for reasons that are unclear in the responsum, and it's unclear to me how they choose who not to go to, meaning in 1972, Moshe Feinstein is a well-established Torah scholar, and he's 77 years old, so he's a well-established gadol of the Torah. In 1972, you certainly have people in Yerushalayim. You have Ravad Yosef, you have Leitzit Eliezer, you have Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, you have Torah scholars of note and of repute. In any case, they turned to Moshe Feinstein. The first question was, they wanted to know if they could build a swimming pool. In Chazon Yecheskel, it's going to be a swimming pool that's obviously going to be an orthodox pool, meaning it's going to be, I think it's going to be just for boys. I don't even think it's going to be a question of separate hours. I think it's going to be just for boys, and there's going to be a wall around it so that nobody will be able to come and swim there unless they're signed in, or unless they sign in with the administrators of the pool, and it's going to be well guarded, well supervised, so that nothing untoward should happen there. So the question is whether they can do it. So Moshe Feinstein says he doesn't understand. It seems clear that the administrators of Chinuch Atzmai, of this set of schools, have assumed that there's some great value in doing this, because they're going to spend, he says, this is 1972, remember, $100,000 or more on this pool. Today that would obviously be a much higher number. And the point of the pool is that all the people who are going to be able to use the pool, he thinks it's going to be thousands of students who will not therefore go to the beach. At the beach, Ramosha says, there's significant obvious problems because people aren't dressed appropriately. He calls it a pritzut de arayot mamash. It is clearly an actual, it's a leading to arayot. Pritzut, right? It's a breaking of breaches of Judaism with real arayos. And I think all he means is, so arayos usually means consummating certain inappropriate sexual acts. But here he clearly doesn't mean that. He means seeing things that are inappropriate and being involved in an environment that is completely inappropriate. And he says, and this pool is going to be supervised so that there's not going to be any of that going on, and therefore it seems clear that it should be okay. He says, I don't even understand the question, because even if it wasn't about not going to the beach, let's say, leave out the not going, let's suppose there was no option for these students to go to the beach, we knew for sure that none of them would go anywhere problematic. He says it's still, there's no problem in creating a swimming pool. What's wrong with a swimming pool? If it's run, you know, in a Torah way, what's wrong with a swimming pool? And he says, not only that, it's also a great kindness to all the students who, it's hot in the summer, and they have no place to swim and splash around in the cold water and enjoy themselves. And if you have one like that in a Chinuch Atzmai environment, he says, they might be drawn to learn Torah more, because they'll get friends in that pool, and it'll make it more pleasant. And the whole idea of being observant in that way, in that Torah way, will be more comfortable, because you say, I don't have to. Meaning, if I say to you, to be orthodox in a certain way, to keep Torah in a certain way, means you're going to have to suffer the whole summer sweating like a pig and not, or sweating very badly and not able to rinse off and not be able to enjoy it. It's going to be a painful life. So you might do it if you think that that's what Hashem demands of you. But if I say to you, you can be fully the same, fully observant, orthodox, happy with Hashem's eyes, then you'll also be able to go, when you have free time, to go swim in a pool. So obviously, so it makes people more comfortable with the learning of Torah. and that kind of a Torah lifestyle. So he says, so that would be, that would already be a kindness to people. But now that's going to keep them from going to the beaches and those things. Not only is it a mitzvah, a good idea, like a nice thing, it's also an obligation. It's really part of creating a Torah environment. And this is a very, very, very important comment that he just sort of throws in there. It's a chovah, it's an obligation. I think what he means is it's an obligation to make sure to help people be able to live the better Torah life if you can. He says, every morning we say in our brachot, Al tivinu l'dechit v'lo yavarav yavod v'lo yaseyon. We should try to, we pray to Hashem at the end of Birchos HaShachar that Hashem should protect us and stop us not only from sin, not only of all kinds, but also from even the testing of sin. And the people who say that, many of them are Torah scholars and are, you know, very observant people, and yet they pray to be safe from those kinds of nisyonot. So all the more so, kids, right? Kids and teenagers who are not so adult yet, they're not so advanced yet, we should do everything we can to help them have a good life in which they won't be tested. So therefore, he says, it's a very good idea to have the pool. And he says, everywhere to here has pools, right? All the camps, all the Orthodox camps, all the camps that, you know, the kinds that he cares about and that care about chinuch of kids, they all make sure to have these kinds of pools. And so obviously, he thinks you can have a pool and you should certainly go ahead, have the pool and enjoy it. That's number one. So number one is clearly a sensitivity to setting up a Torah lifestyle in a way we're permitted, and here he thinks it's completely permitted, there's no issue. Apparently some people had said, you know, pools bring preachers. Pools bring problematic issues, even if it's just boys or just girls. And so Rav Moshe Feinstein was saying, he thinks that's a very distant worry. You know, sadly, unfortunately, we hear so many stories today about things that go on in various environments of, you know, administrators or teachers or whatever, that it's not as clear that there's no problem whatsoever, because unfortunately things happen. But I think Rav Moshe would still stand by saying that's a very distant worry, and the good way outweighs any worry that you have about things going on. That's number one, to help people not go to what he thinks is problematic in terms of being able to go to beaches and being there in those kinds of environments, and also just for the fact of giving people who otherwise might not have a chance to swim and relax and chill out in the summer in an environment that they're comfortable with and that lets them cool off, he thinks that's a great chesed, you should do that. So that's the first much shorter part of the tshuva. Second part of the tshuva, which raises very similar issues, and Rav Moshe Feinstein takes the time to talk about it in a broader perspective, stems from the following question. Where they have these schools, the cities, the government, the state of Israel, the cities, the municipalities, provide fruit and vegetables for the kids. They do this for all students at the time. They did it for all the students as part of, you know, trying to help have good nutrition in the state of Israel. So the Chinuch Atzmai schools get that as part of their budget. They get, not it's not a budget, they get those fruits and vegetables as well. The problem is those fruits and vegetables come from places, and it's a Shemitah year, they come from places that rely on the Heter Mechira. The Heter Mechira, just in brief, is this claim, it goes back to the late 1800s, that it would be possible to technically sell the land of Israel, somewhat akin to how we sell chametz before Pesach, so to technically sell the land of Israel before the Shemitah year, and the claim is that means the fruit and vegetables that grow in Israel that year are not Jewish fruit and vegetables, and therefore, and they're not growing in the land of Israel, because the land of Israel loses its kedusha when it's owned by a non-Jew for these purposes. These are all halakhic questions that Rav Moshe Feinstein and others don't think is true, but there were other important rabbis, and at the time, for sure, it was the policy of the chief rabbi of the state of Israel, I think it still is, including Rav Avadya Yosef, I think, and that could be why they don't ask Rav Avadya Yosef this question. The policy of the state of Israel was that it's okay, that it's acceptable, and therefore you can eat those fruits and vegetables, and they don't have the sanctity of Shavuot. So these fruits and vegetables are coming from the Iriyah, from the municipality. The administrators of Chinuch Atzmai want to know, can they feed them to their students? Now, a piece of this question is, the question is, at one level, if I think X thing is prohibited, and a person Y thinks it's permissible, right, am I allowed to give them that which I think is prohibited, even though they think it's permissible? Here, that's especially true because these students come from homes, by and large, where they eat Heter Mechira. Meaning, these aren't kids who are the administrators of Chinuch Atzmai are saying that their students, many, many of them, perhaps most of them, I don't know, but many, many of them don't come from homes that observe all the stringencies of halacha or the view of halacha that the Chinuch Atzmai people do. they eat heter mechira. So if they eat heter mechira, in some sense, I'm not, if I am an administrator of a chinuch atzmai school, or I'm a teacher at a chinuch atzmai school, and I give a kid a cucumber that I think is a problem because it grew in the land of Israel during a Shemitah year, but that kid thinks, that kid's whole family thinks, that it's not a problem, and that tonight at home, that kid will be eating a very similar cucumber to this cucumber, that's the question. And it's especially a pressing question because they can't get substitute fruit and vegetables for the kids because I think it costs too much money and it doesn't have and they don't have the budget for that and the municipality is unwilling to provide them with other kinds of fruits and vegetables than they have right now. And if they decide not to provide fruits and vegetables, that would be a choice that they could make. Then a lot of these kids would switch schools. And those schools are enam al pi ruach haTorah, or do not follow the Torah lifestyle. It's unclear in the question if what they mean is they go to mamlachti dati schools, schools that are officially religious, but that the chinuch atzmai administrators think is not religious enough. Or if they mean, and I think it's plausible that they mean even more so, they'll just go to regular public schools that have no Jewish content other than whatever the state of Israel happens to do, and that would be a tragedy. So what do they do about this? So Rav Moshe Feinstein starts off by saying that he really doesn't like to answer questions about Hilchot HaTlin Ba'aretz, about laws that have to do with the land of Israel, because he's not living there. So that's an interesting approach of his, and I'm not sure everybody would always be so sensitive to as he was. Meaning he's saying, I don't live there, it's not really my issue, just because he doesn't mean learning why he's not involved, because he means practical life living, he's not involved in these questions, and therefore he tries not to answer such questions. But since it's really the question isn't really about that, it's really about the question of lifne iver. When are Jews allowed or not allowed to help or lead or be part of other people sitting, right? Lifnei iver lo tin mekshol means literally don't put a stumbling block before the blind, but it's taken in halacha to mean not only a literal stumbling block, but also any kind of way in which I would be part of causing somebody else to sin, I'm not allowed to do it. And that's the topic here, basically. If I think this cucumber is not permitted and I give it to somebody to eat, I'm helping them violate halacha, as far as I understand it. So that's the question that comes here. So since that question is really a broad halachic question, comes up in many contexts, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, so I think that I have the right maybe to weigh in on this, because it's not really about a halacha tuliya ba'aretz. It's an application of lifnei iver, of the question of how we do or don't stop others from sin to a particular issue, and therefore I think that I have the right to do it. Maybe I have the right to weigh in. And it's also because chinuch atzmai, this network of schools, he says, that's not an Israel issue. That's about making sure the Torah is taught to the next generation and is helped to flower and to grow. And that's very, very much important to that. And I work hard on that question as well. So in other words, it's not that he's saying, I don't like to answer questions about Israel because I don't know them well enough. Or I don't like to answer questions about Israel because I'm not living there. He says, because if I'm not involved in an issue, he feels like he shouldn't be answering the question. And so the way he's justifying it to himself now is that A, it's a broader issue that he is involved in, the question of lifting iver, and B, chinuch atzmai is a project that he himself feels like he's involved in, even though he's doing it in America. They're doing it in Israel. It's a similar project. So therefore, he feels like he's part of it enough that he has the right to answer that question. So therefore, he's going to answer the question. So the prohibition of lifnei iver usually only applies if I'm the only way that the other person could commit this sin. Meaning, they ask me a question or they want to do something, and by my answer, they will or won't commit a sin. If I then help them to commit that sin, that's a problem of lifnei iver. So that doesn't apply here, because if we don't give them, if the chinuch atzmai people don't give them these fruits and vegetables, they'll eat them in their house, or they'll go to another school. So they have many options for violating this halacha if they choose to, from our perspective, right? If we're going to assume for now, we're going to assume that this is clearly and prohibited to eat these fruits and vegetables. We'll come back to the fact that it's not clearly prohibited in this responsum in a second. Rav Moshe Feinstein will get to that. But right now, even if we assume it's completely prohibited, it's not a prohibition that I am the causing factor of them doing in general. Right, so that's lifnei iver. Lifnei iver is when I am supporting and helping them commit a sin that they otherwise would not be able to do. Where they would do it without me, and then I'm invited to take part in it, so that on a Torah level is considered not lifnei iver. There is a derabbanan, the rabbinically in the Gemara already. Rabbinically, there's a prohibition called misayeya. I can't help people sin, even if they could do it without me. So that creates all sorts of interesting questions, and we're going to get into some of them right here. So the Rav Moshe Fine. So here, clearly, the Chinuch Atzmai administrators at all their schools, if they give out the fruits and vegetables, they're being misayeya. If they had said to the municipality, thank you very much, but we can't take your fruits and vegetables, and not had fruits and vegetables for lunch the whole Shemitah year, so we've had all these problems, right? The kids would leave school, and they would go to other schools, all that. That may be true. But without that, the students would not be eating these fruits and vegetables at their lunchtime. True, they would eat other fruits and vegetables of equal halachic status at other points in their day, but when the administrators and the teachers give out these fruits and vegetables, they're helping them violate this halacha to the extent that it's a violation of a halacha. They're helping them violate this halacha. So that's a derabbanan of misayeya. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, so let's talk about misayeya a little bit. Is misayeya a rabbinic extension of lifnei iver lo titen michshol, that I can't put a stumbling block before the blind, and that rabbinically Chazal came along and said, you know what, even though they can do it without you, we're going to say don't help anyway? Or maybe it's a completely different issue. So what's the completely different issue? So Moshe Feinstein points out that there's a Tosfot in Shabbat that says that the reason for Misayeya is Shechayav lahafrisho me'isur, that we have an obligation to fellow Jews, and we're going to get to what that obligation is as we go on, but we have a general obligation to fellow Jews to help them not sin. Meaning lifnei iver is about I can't help them to sin. But the way Tosfot expressed it is that I have an obligation to help them not sin. So if I have an obligation to help them not sin, and the Rush right there writes that it's similar to the discussion in the Gemara about if a child is eating non-kosher food, so Beit Din in general should or shouldn't, there's a discussion in the Gemara, should or shouldn't stop the child from eating. So whether or not the Beit Din is or isn't required to, the comparison the Rush thinks Beit Din should stop the child, and the Beit Din should stop a child, all the more so we should try to stop adults from sinning. So we're going to get to it, but basically that turns it into a question of tochacha. Right? There's a mitzvah, another mitzvah in the Torah. There's a mitzvah in the Torah of hocheach tochiach l'amitecha, that if a Jew sees a fellow Jew doing something wrong, the Jew is supposed to try to find a way. An effective, productive way, not just an angry or mean way, but an effective, productive way to stop the fellow Jew, to the extent possible, from sinning. So that mitzvah of tochacha might be what we're talking about here in the comparison to Beit Din being mafrish somebody, Beit Din stopping somebody from sinning, or other things like that. So if that's true, that's going to have a lot of differences that'll be important. Roger Weiss says, and don't try to prove it, maybe, from the fact that we're allowed to help non-Jews do something that's prohibited to them if they can do it without us. That's a halachic discussion that we're not going to have here. Rav Moshe Feinstein just points it out. It's a Magen Avraham in Shin Mem Zayin, Sivkotin Dalid. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, no, he thinks that doesn't prove anything. He thinks that with a non-Jew, it could just be that as long as that lifnei iver applies to a non-Jew, by the way. If the non-Jew could not violate this prohibition without us, then we have a Torah prohibition not to help them to sin. Because lifnei iver, not to put a stumbling block before the blind, is not a question of our relation with fellow Jews, our concern for fellow Jews. It's just a question of how we treat other people. If somebody else is going to do something wrong and they can't do it without me being involved in it, I'm not allowed to be involved in it to help them, because then I'm really helping them do something that's damaging to them, even if they don't realize it. That applies to non-Jews equally as to Jews. But there's no rabbinic prohibition of misayeya, Rav Moshe Feinstein says. But that doesn't mean that it's because misayeya comes from a different prohibition than lifnei iver. It could still be that it comes from lifnei iver, just that when Chazal decided to extend it, they only decided to extend it in terms of Jews. So that's not going to prove it. You might have thought that proves that it's a question of tochacha, because tochacha, hocheach tochiach l'amitecha, is clearly only to fellow Jews. Meaning, if the misayeya prohibition of helping people when they could do it on their own is a function of our requirement to do our best to help people not sin, that's an obligation that really pretty much only applies to fellow Jews. But Rosh Vaitz says, so you can't, but you, so you might have thought, well, if I'm allowed rabbinically to help a non-Jew if they could do it without me, and that becomes very important because let's say a non-Jew doesn't care about Jewish values and asks you to do something and it's uncomfortable to refuse to do it, this becomes a great leniency and a helpful leniency because if they could do it without us, then we don't have the obligation to step in. But Ramosha Feinstein says, don't draw the wrong conclusion that that's because it's only a question of tochacha. It could even be a question of the Tehivir, just because Chazal decided not to extend it for whatever reasons they decided not to extend it. But a better proof, he says, is that the Shach says that if you have a mumar, so a mumar is somebody who sadly has left observance, either because they've gone to a different religion or just because they've left observance. But with a mumar, so the Shach says, there's still a problem with Lisa Iver. You can't help them where they couldn't do it without you. But where they could do it without you, the Shach says there's no problem of Misayeya. And the Dogma Rigavava says there that he doesn't mean that the person has to be a complete mumar in all ways of Judaism. As long as this person violates this prohibition knowingly and willingly without me anyway, then there's no problem misayeh anymore. That's what the Shach says. And the Shach says it as, because of, since the Rosh brought the proof from Katan Ochel Nevelot, right? That was, if you remember, Tosfot said, we have an obligation, la frisho min ha'isr, to separate people from sin if we can. The Rosh had said there, it's something that you can derive logically from the fact that we generally think a Beit Din should stop children from sinning, all the more so they should stop adults from sinning, because with adults, the sins are more serious, because children aren't fully liable for their sins. So the point is, though, that proof only works if the topic at hand is shogeg, is where the person doesn't realize that they're sinning. Because a katan is considered a minor, is considered not aware of himself and not fully knowledgeable. So if the minor, therefore, is about to sin, if we stop them, that's stopping a shogeg. But if a person is doing it willingly, knowingly, and purposely, that's a whole different discussion. It wouldn't have been relevant there. Because otherwise, by the way, Moshe Simon says, it's odd that the Rosh would choose to try to prove that. Because the idea that we stop adults from sinning when we have the ability to stop them from sinning, that's clear in the Gemara. You don't need a proof from the fact that a Beit Din would stop a Katan, would stop a minor from sinning. When we, in the Gemara, when people are sinning, the Beit Din stops them. They're allowed to hit them. They're allowed to punish them, and they're required to. There are all sorts of things that they do to stop people from sinning. As a Rashi, quotes a Rashi in Bava Kama that says it about a particular case that you're allowed to, when somebody's sinning, you're allowed to give him a malkot, not a malkot of punishment, but a malkot of flogging, punishment, just to stop them from committing their prohibition. And it's in a bunch of places in the Gemara that we stop people from sinning. And it's Paskin in Choshen Mishpat. If you look up Choshen Mishpat, Tav Chaf Aleph Yud Gimel 421. Paragraph 13, it's not only the Beit Din. It's anybody. If I have the ability, if any Jew has the ability to stop another Jew from sinning in some kind of an effective way, we have an obligation to do that. So the fact that all of a sudden when it comes to talking about Misayeya, about helping other people sin, so it's odd that we would look for proofs, for logical reasons to assume that we are allowed or required to do so, because obviously we have to do so. It's clear we do so. So Moshe Feinstein says it must be that this issue of Misayeya is only comes up where I can't stop the person from sinning. Because if I can't stop them, if I have the power, the halachic power, the legislative power, whatever the power is, if I have the power to stop them, I have to stop them. Right? In other words, let's suppose I have a little child in my house and I'm the father of a child and this 7-year-old wants to sin. So the question of whether I can help them or not doesn't even come up, Moshe Feinstein is saying, because I can stop them. I'm their father. I say, no, you can't do that, and I stop them. That's true at a social level as well. If I can stop somebody from doing something, then I have to. That's not a question to say yes. So, let's suppose somebody has had enough to drink that it's a problem in terms of driving, or they come in the house and they say, I'm the one driving back tonight. Now, give me a drink. So I don't want to get into technicalities of how many drinks one may or may not have. I think one shouldn't have any drinks if one is driving. But let's suppose it's gotten to a point where if I give them another drink, I have reason to think they're going to drink without driving. But much of it is saying, it's my house. It's not a question of Misayeya to give them a drink. It's my house. I can stop them from drinking by not giving them to drink. So if I can really stop them, completely stop them, then I have to. So the whole question comes up where I can't stop them, right? I'm sitting at a bar with them, in a bar, and they're drinking too much, and they say to me, go get me a drink. Right? So I can't stop them, because if I say no, they'll go get a drink. That's where misayaya comes up as an issue. So he says, and what Tosfot and the Rosh are saying there is that rabbinically, I still can't help them, right? Because I'm not allowed to help people sin. So if so, he says, the proof of the Rosh that comes from the katan, from the minor who's eating non-kosher food, shows that when we're talking about a situation where I can't stop them, I am supposed to say something to them. I have to say, it's prohibited, you shouldn't do it. Because even in saying things, there's an element of separating people from sin, Rav Moshe Feinstein says. And then the Shach came along to say that that's all about a Jew who is not aware of the prohibition that he's violating. We have to say something. And he says, why is that? Because otherwise, I would have to stop them. And if I think they're going to believe me and completely stop, then that's again becomes a question of obviously I have to do it because they're going to stop. So I can effectively stop them. I certainly can't. The question of Isaiah comes up where I can't stop them myself either by force or by the power of my words and my persuasion. In those cases, even so, I'm not allowed to help them. That's if there is shogig. So it's interesting that Rosh Hashanah is assuming that because he assumes that even after I tell them, if they don't believe me, they still qualify as a shogig. We're going to have an example of that right here in our original case. So the question is, you can't help them anyway because they're going to do it. So all of that only applies, though, if the person is a shogeg, because that's all the case that we're talking about. But if he's amazing, if he knows what he's doing is wrong, which is different than he thinks what he's doing is right. That's an important point here that we're going to get to. When we say somebody's amazing, they know what they're doing, and they're doing it knowingly and deliberately. We don't mean they're doing it knowingly and deliberately and they think they're right for doing it. We mean they know it's wrong and they're doing it anyway. That counts as amazing. Such a person, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, since I can't stop them, there's an obligation to try to separate people from sin if I can. Since I can't stop them, there's no way to stop them. And if I and even saying something to them won't stop them. So then the Shach is saying there's no prohibition from helping them as well because there's no value to not helping because they're going to do it on their own. They're going to do it without me. Nothing I can do to stop them. And then Chazal did not institute the Misayeh. Misayeh, Chazal instituted was where I can't technically stop them. And I can't convince them that it's wrong. And I can convince them not to do it by verbally trying not to do it. So they're going to do it anyway, So they know it's wrong. They're not willing to stop. There, Chazal said, you can't help them too. You don't have a way to stop them, so don't stop them. But you can't help them. But when they're amazing, when they're doing it, and they know that it's wrong, so there, Chazal did not institute this prohibition. That's where Rav Moshe Feinstein is understanding the issue. That's where the Tosfot and the Rosh and the Shach seem to put together the issue. An example of that is, and proof that there's this idea that this kind of tokacha is a halachic obligation, that it applies even after somebody sins, that it applies even where somebody is going to do a sin or has already done the sin and applies for the future, comes from a story in the Gemara in Erechin where Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, you know, I used to talk about Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Gamliel all the time, and Rabbi Akiva would get punished by Rabbi Gamliel because this Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would say to Rabbi Gamliel, you know, Rabbi Akiva did this, he wasn't Rabbi Akiva yet, he was a student, he was just Akiva. He said he did this and this and this, and Rabbi Gamliel would feel the need to discipline him for however he acted. And the point of the story is Rabbi Akiva accepted it and he understood it and it didn't ruin their relationship. But the point that Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying is that clearly there, if Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri had an opportunity to tell Rabbi Akiva beforehand he was doing something wrong, and a guy like Rabbi Akiva would never have rejected it. So it must be that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri didn't know about it before and he saw him do it and then he complained about it. It shows that tokacha is also about the past, complaining about the past, talking about the past, remonstrating with somebody about their past, so they'll do better in the future. And the Shach is saying that this whole idea of tokacha doesn't apply to somebody who's doing it b'mezid, unless we have a way to convince them to stop doing it b'mezid. But in general, if somebody's doing it knowingly, deliberately, doesn't care that it's wrong, then any words that we say aren't going to convince them of anything, and therefore, we no longer have an obligation of tokacha. If we no longer have an obligation of tokacha, we have no obligation to remonstrate with them because it's not going to have any effect, and we know that. And then we know that because they've done it already many times and we see that they're doing it and they're going to do it again anyway. So then he says there's also no prohibition of misayeya, because misayeya, he is concluding, is an extension of the obligation of tochacha, of remonstrating with our fellow Jews, trying to help them find the way not to sin, not of the issue of lifnei iver. Which brings us here, because if somebody's doing it al pi horat chacham, if they have rabbis who tell them, poskim, who tell them it's okay to eat these fruits and vegetables, that's like amazing. It's not like amazing that they're wrong in the way that they're such deliberate sinners, but it's like amazing that they have enough halachic justification that they're not going to believe you. There's no tochacha there. They're following their poskim. So to try, Rosh finds the thing, if they have legitimate poskim, I can maybe disagree with those poskim, but there's no obligation under you to try to prove to somebody their poskim are not the right poskim. Right? As long as their poskim are people of repute. So Rosh finds the thing saying, I may disagree with the Heter Mechira, but it's got enough support with people who are bari hachi, who are people who have sufficient legitimacy in the halachic system, that there's no issue of tochacha there. If there's no issue of tochacha, so then there's no issue of misayeya, and then you can give them these fruits and vegetables because they would eat them anywhere elsewhere. He does say, he thinks that if there are kids, and this gets to a whole thing that we run out of time, so I can't get into, but it gets to a whole thing of a demai question, but he does think if there are children who are young enough, they can't eat on their own, and teachers would have to feed it to them by putting them in their mouth, he thinks that's like the administrator sort of doing the act of eating for them. That already would be prohibited, because that's not misayeh anymore, that's actually doing what they think of as a problematic halachic activity. So fundamentally, Rav Moshe Feinstein, about the pool, has no issue, because the pool is a kindness to them, and there's no problem of leading others to sin. But when it comes to leading others to sin, he sets up for us this very interesting structure of when we can or cannot partake of other people sinning. If we have the ability to stop them from doing so, he thinks we have to. We can't mislead them into sinning, that's lifnei iver. But if they can do it on their own, there's no lifnei iver issue. If they can do it on their own and they are not aware that it's a sin, then we have a prohibition of misayeh. We're not allowed to help them, even if they won't listen to us. Where they would listen to us, we have to stop them. But where they're doing it deliberately and knowingly and they don't care, and that could be either because they're sadly have lost contact with halacha on an issue and they don't care about that halacha, or our more interesting example, they can have what they think of as halacha justification because they have poskim who say to them that it's okay. So even if we're completely confident that that's not true, even if that were to be true, Rav Moshe Feinstein says there too, there's no problem misayeya of helping them, because from their perspective, it's not a sin, and therefore they are like amazing in the sense that we don't have to try to stop them from doing that in that situation. I apologize for running out of time. There's a little bit more here that we could have done, and we could have shared together. Let me just close with another interesting thing that I only noticed now. Rav Moshe Feinstein very often closes his responsa by saying, "V'hinni yidido mokiro," I'm your friend, and I respect you and admire you, and I always just thought it was a closing. Happens to be that in this particular Tshuva, he says, "V'hinni yidido mokiro," I am your friend and admire, "shel kol echad minalei chinuch atzmai," from every one of the administrators of the chinuch atzmai, you're doing it for all the right reasons, etc., etc., which means to me, I think, that the closing was about him expressing, it's not just like a polite closing, it's about him expressing his admiration for and his interest in the person that he's answering, and therefore, in this case, he wants to make sure that they know that it's every single one of them that he is doing, that he is expressing his admiration, his friendship for, and wishing them all the best success, as I obviously wish for all of you. And that is a responsible day for the 18th of Kislev. Rav Moshe Feinstein, on when we do and don't have to make our best attempts to stop others from sinning. Have a great day.